I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast, part of the 90 Min Football Network. As ever, I'm your host, Harry Simeon. And on this edition of the show, we're going to be looking back at Arsenal's 4-2 victory over Leicester City in our first home Premier League fixture of the season. You'll have to excuse my throat today. It is not in a good way. I've tried to have a couple of hot drinks this morning, tried to soothe it a little bit. It's not working. So you're going to have to bear with me. My tone is going to be a little bit more croaky today than normal, but it is what it is. It was because of the Arsenal. We'll take it. We'll move on and we'll enjoy it. I'd rather have the win and a sore throat than no win. So we'll put it that way. Big hello to everybody joining us in the live chat this morning. Hope you are all well. Hope you're all good. Hope you're enjoying the sunshine, particularly if you're based here in London, because it is another scorcher. And Moss says in the chat, morning Gooners. Harry, are you preparing for a Sunday barbecue? I wasn't planning to do a barbecue today, but I'm tempted. I'm not going to lie, I am tempted. So there is a chance. Arsenal. Harry has made contact with the meats representative. No, awful joke. Look, yeah, there is a good chance that there might be one today, but we'll see how it goes a little bit later on, because I am absolutely shattered after a really, really busy Saturday. Great to see some of you down at Emirates Stadium yesterday as well. Big shout out to Moss, Tariq, and to Trev, who all met up, became friends through the Chronicles of Aguna, which is amazing. So a big shout out to you guys as well. And I did pop into the Tollington to say hello to you guys. I wish I could have stayed longer, but I was covering the game for BBC Radio London. I did have a new piece of kit that I needed to set up, which I was a little bit worried about. You know, you get a new piece of kit, you don't really know how it works. The last thing you want to do is get into the stadium 20 minutes before you're on air and have all sorts of problems. So I wanted to go just a little bit earlier and get it all done. And my dial-up time was quite early as well. But thankfully, it all went well. But it was great to see you guys anyway, and great to see some of the rest of you as well, because a few other people said hello as well. Okay, let's get into the game, because it's another win. It's another really good performance from the Gunners. And again, there's lots and lots to be positive and pleased about. And look, the atmosphere in the first home game of the season is always pretty good. You know, it is. People are back. People return. There are a lot of fans that go just to the home games. And so for them, it's the start of their football season. You know, it's great to play in front of your own fans. And there was a lot of optimism and a lot of confidence going into this one off the back of the way we beat Crystal Palace in the opening weekend. It was a good performance for the most part at Selhurst Park. There was a bit of a rocky period in the second half, but we rode through it and we managed to, you know, we managed to get that second goal late on and basically put the game to bed. So we went into the game with a lot of expectation, a lot of hope. And there's been a lot of negative noise around Leicester City going into the campaign, and I think somewhat unfairly. I think there are problems at Leicester. I don't think this is the Leicester that we've seen over the last few years. And I do think that Leicester, you could say, are on the decline. But is it actually a decline, or is it just Leicester levelling out? I would argue that it's Leicester levelling out and Leicester performing at the level that they probably should be performing at, given the size of the club, given, you know, their history, et cetera, et cetera. But what happened was Leicester raised the level of expectation over the last few years. They won the title back in, I think it was the 15-16 season. They've always been in and around the top eight since then. They won the FA Cup not too long ago as well. And so the expectation levels of Leicester City are much higher. And that causes people to look at them and say, well, look, they're massively underachieving now, which isn't really the case, I would say. They still have the likes of Maddison, who hurt us yesterday with a goal. They still have the likes of Jamie Vardy, who caused us some problems in behind. They still have the likes of Wilfred Ndidi in midfield, a top quality centre-back in Wesley Fofana. So there's still a lot of quality within Brendan Rodgers' side. So this was never going to be an easy game, never going to be an easy fixture. In fact, I don't think there are any easy fixtures in the Premier League nowadays. It's the nature of the competition. So yes, I went into the game confident. Yes, I went into the game expecting a victory. But there was this tiny little part of me that was thinking, well, nothing is a given in this league. And actually, I didn't think Arsenal started the game too great. I know we had a couple of chances early on. You know, most notably the Granit Xhaka header off of the crossbar coming in at the far post after a wonderful delivery from Bukayo Saka. You know, that was a good opportunity. But outside of that, I just felt that Arsenal struggled to get going. They struggled to play with the tempo and the rhythm that they played in the early stages of the Crystal Palace game. Now, on my report on the radio, one of the things I said just before kickoff, maybe 20, 30 minutes before kickoff, was it is really hot at Emirates Stadium. It's a really hot day. We're playing at the hottest time of the day, maybe. And so there's a good chance that that will have an impact on the intensity level at which the game is played. There's a good chance that Arsenal won't be able to sustain that level for long periods of time because of that. Yep, we've got five substitutes nowadays and you can make those changes and you can freshen it up when you want. But I actually think sometimes that can disrupt the rhythm and flow of a game if you keep changing personnel. So I was almost prepared for the fact and for the idea of us going into this game and maybe not being as intense as we were, for example, at Crystal Palace. And I certainly thought that was the case in the first 20 or so minutes. But when you've got players of Gabriel Jesus's quality in your side who can make something happen out of nothing, then, you know, you always stand a great chance. And after 23 minutes, Gabriel Jesus pulled out a bit of magic. He got the ball inside the penalty area. He got it back, I think, off of Gabby Martinelli after the pair combined. I think the ball was laid off to him, sorry. And he took that touch. And you're thinking there, hold on a minute. Like, there's nowhere really for him to put this ball. Like, there's nowhere really for him to stick this. And he looks up and he's just got that imagination to think, you know what? I can beat Ward from here. And he sort of chips it towards the far corner. I think it may have, and I can't make my mind up, but I think it may have taken just an ever so slight deflection on its way. But it loops over Ward in the Leicester City goal and drops in into that far corner. And you're thinking, wow, what a way to open your Premier League account for the Arsenal. And what a way to lift us when, okay, we'd had a couple of chances prior, but we clearly weren't at full tilt. We clearly weren't at the level that we were in the first half an hour, let's say, at Crystal Palace. Leicester had sat quite deep, a lot deeper than I thought they would. Brendan Rodgers, normally quite an offensive manager, but he did sit his team that little bit deeper. They did revert to a back five most of the time with that midfield trio just in front of them, protecting. Jamie Vardy was pretty much left alone up top to run the channels, and Leicester were always going to look to hit us on the counter-attack. But it was a difficult team to break down. And then when you get that goal, it completely changes the dynamic of the game. And that goal, dare I say, it reminded me of Alexis Sanchez. That was the type of goal that Alexis Sanchez would have pulled out. That was the type of goal that Alexis Sanchez would score when you weren't playing massively well. And again, look, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Arsenal played badly in the first 20 minutes, but it wasn't quite the level I'd hoped for and quite the level I'd expected. And I've mentioned the reasons why that might have been. But to pull out a goal like that, as I keep saying, breaking the deadlock just completely changes the dynamics of the match and means that Leicester City now do have to come out. Leicester City do have to now come and play us. And that gives you more space in behind. It gives you more space in between the lines. And I thought Arsenal really, really benefited from that. And then the second goal, obviously another set piece goal. I don't think there's a team in the Premier League that have scored more goals from corners than Arsenal since the start of last season. I think it's 15. The set piece coach really earning his money at the moment. And, you know, Leicester City have got a tendency to concede from those types of situations, but you still got to be in the right positions to put the ball in the back of the net. And so to see Gabriel Jesus, what, I don't know, 12 minutes earlier, score a really sublime goal, a goal that was full of guile and imagination and class, to then kind of just pop up at the far post like a poacher and score that type of goal as well was great to see. Jamie Vardy at the near post flicked it on inadvertently. I think he tried to kind of divert it out of the way of danger. And of course, Gabriel Jesus was at the far post and he pounced and he made it 2-0. And from then on, I thought, well, you know what? This could be a pretty comfortable afternoon. I do think with this Arsenal side, given that we play a very specific game, given that we like to play with aggression and intensity, I do think it's so, so important that this team get off to good starts. And, you know, I would have said that I thought we probably needed a goal in the first 15, 20. We needed to wait slightly longer than that, 22, 23 minutes for the first one to come. But then you get the second so soon after and you think, okay, you know, we've managed to get our noses in front, which is what this team are much better at dealing with, in my personal opinion. So, yeah, look, great to see. And obviously at 2-0, you're thinking happy, happy days. And then right on the stroke of half time, Leicester City thought they had a penalty kick. And that was a little bit disappointing. It was a little bit frustrating. Now, I was in the press box and I had a pretty good view of the situation. And it did look to me from a distance that Aaron Ramsdale had pulled out of the challenge. But as I said in my sort of instant reaction video on the YouTube channel, it's very often that we see goalkeepers kind of make that gesture, or defenders make that gesture, as if to pull their arms away and say, nope, nothing from me, ref. There was no contact. I didn't touch him. We see that so, so frequently. But often they do that even having gone into the challenge, even after having made that contact. And so it's not really something that the referee can take into consideration when making his decision. For example, you can't go, oh, well, look, he's put his arms up. He must have pulled away. You can't trust players, goalkeepers in those situations, to be honest. They're going to do what suits them, and rightly so. But it's down to the referee to make the correct call. And what I think probably should have happened there is Darren England, the referee, should have, I think, waved play on. I don't think he could have been certain that there was a penalty there. I think he should have waved play on. And at the first time the ball went out of play, the VAR could have stepped in and had a look and just confirmed that decision. Instead, he was really, really quick to blow the whistle and point to the spot when pretty much everybody in the ground was thinking, I'm not sure about this. I mean, there's some instances where you look at them and you think, my God, that looks like a Stonewall penalty. And you can still be wrong. But in that instance, I think it looked questionable from the very off. Darren England took a VAR. But at the end of the day, apologies there, I don't know what happened. But at the end of the day, you know, if we didn't have VAR yesterday, Leicester City could have pulled themselves back into the game. Leicester City could have been 2-1 at halftime and with the momentum on their side. And that would have been completely unfair because the decision was a ludicrous one. So thankfully there is VAR, and I'm told it was Mike Dean of all people who suggested that decision be overturned. Darren England came over, he had a couple of looks at it and then moved to cancel the decision, which I think was a big moment in the game. It was the right call. As I keep saying, Jamie Vardy has made a career of that, of using his pace to get himself and put himself in between centre halves and goalkeepers and win penalty kicks. And that's what he does. He tries to engineer the contact. He tries to leave a foot in, a leg in, and ultimately wins penalty kicks as a result. Martin AFC 81 says, anyone else getting a lag? I just got a notification that my internet connection for some reason has just dropped in speed midway through the live stream. So please bear with me because I can't like pause it in the middle of the show. So I do apologize for that, but I think it should be getting better now. I can see the speed picking up again. Apologies. It's just one of those things when you do live stuff. But yeah. Anyway, so yeah, look, really, 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 really glad that VAR stepped in and made sure that Arsenal didn't go in at halftime 2-1, because that wouldn't have been a fair reflection of the half. I think Leicester did anything up until that point. The only moment they had was that chance for Fana, where Granit Xhaka gave the ball away for Fana, picked it up, drove towards the Arsenal penalty area, exchanged passes. I think it was with either Vardy or Maddison. And when he got the ball back, he broke into the box and he made Aaron Ramsdale produce a save. Aaron Ramsdale smothering the ball and doing a really, really good job of making sure that that didn't result in a goal as well. But outside of those two moments, I never at any point felt concerned by Leicester City or what they were bringing to the table. And that was a reflection of you know, how although Arsenal weren't at their brilliant best at times, they were still completely dominant. They tried to hit the channels. They tried to hit the spaces in between Gabriel and Zinchenko and in between Saliba and White. Saliba, so quick across the ground and brilliant in his covering all the time, made sure that they didn't get any joy in that. And we'll come on to talk a little bit about the individuals a bit later on. But then the second half came, and, you know, right at the start of the second half, Arsenal go and concede a goal. 53 minutes, William Saliba own goal. Listen, a lot of people have tried to kind of, A lot of people have tried to paint a picture as to, you know, who was to blame for that goal. Some have said it's Saliba. Some have said it's Ramsdale for his positioning. Ultimately, it's just a bit of miscommunication. Ultimately, it's a relationship that's still developing, that between Saliba and Ramsdale. You know, Saliba hasn't played an awful lot with Aaron Ramsdale. He doesn't know his positioning. He doesn't know where he's going to be. He doesn't know really what to expect from Aaron Ramsdale in the way that maybe Gabriel does, in the way that Ben White does. So, listen, miscommunication. And in the end, it didn't really matter. But what was really, really encouraging to see was the way the fans responded to that. Arsenal, for years and years and years, have had this problem within Emirates Stadium that I've talked about myself on numerous occasions, where we moan and we groan and we complain, and, you know, we get on the players' backs. Why? Because we demand a really high standard, and because we want to see the best football that we can possibly see. And when our team doesn't win, it's disappointing. And when our team's not playing well, it's disappointing. But you really feel right now that there's this unity at the football club. There is a kind of a togetherness. There is a feel-good factor. And it's so much more than just the standard feel-good factor that you get at the beginning of a new season and the standard feel-good factor that you get at the first home game of the season. It's so much more than that at the moment. And William Saliba gets ahead to the ball. You know, he puts it in the bottom corner, unfortunately. And Ramsdale's positioning, where he's kind of half out to deal with the situation, doesn't help. But look, Saliba's got to deal with it. He's got to do something. He doesn't know what's going on behind him. I think Jamie Vardy was lurking in behind. He's got to deal with it. And unfortunately, it ended up in the back of the net where it did. Thankfully, it was neither here nor there. But the response from the fans when Saliba put the ball in his own net was superb. To see everybody get up, applaud, and really give William Saliba the encouragement was something great to see. It's the biggest telltale sign that the negativity, the toxicity that still exists in some corners is at an absolute minimum now. There's not a lot of that now. You know, it's everybody's kind of on the same page and everybody's feeling good. And the way they lifted Saliba, the way the fans lifted Saliba was great to see. And Mikel Arteta, I was in his press conference post-match, you know, that was the first thing he said, you know, that I'm so delighted with the way that the fans rallied behind William Saliba, and that Mikel Arteta felt that it gave Saliba the confidence to pick himself up after that mistake and sort of refocus himself. We'll come on to talk about the individual performances in a minute. I keep saying that, but we will. We'll do them in detail because I do want to focus a little bit on William Saliba. But yeah, you know, and then Arsenal go down the other end and respond immediately. Now, of course, the goal was a gift, just like the goal that we'd just given Leicester City. But Gabriel Jesus, sharp to pounce on the mishandling by Ward and then just roll it square to Granit Xhaka, who was in the kind of position that we've not become accustomed to seeing Granit Xhaka in, you know, throughout the years he's played for the Arsenal. He's always played in that slightly deeper midfield role, and he's been given in this current system much more license to get forward. And I actually think it suits him. You know, I think a lot of people, when we first made that sort of system shift, a lot of people felt that maybe Granit Xhaka's a bit of a square peg in a round hole here. And I'm not saying that there aren't better fits in terms of player profile for that left-sided eight role that Granit Xhaka seems to be playing at the moment. But he's taken to it brilliantly. You know, he gets up the pitch. He gets back and covers the fullback as well, fantastically. He keeps the ball moving in the final third. That's what I really like about what Granit Xhaka's doing at the moment. It's not always something spectacular. There's not always many thrills, but it is about keeping the ball ticking over, keeping the ball moving, occupying half spaces, tempting center halves by how high up he starts his position, or how high up he takes up his position to come out and confront him, thus creating spaces for others. So I think he's doing a superb job. And again, we'll come on to him in a little bit more detail. But for him to get the goal was obviously pleasing to see. I noticed a couple of people kind of saying after he scored the goal and he kind of wheeled away, making the heart sign, whatever it was, towards the north bank. Just for clarity, right? So that's the corner that I normally sit in. Granit Xhaka's wife and kids sit literally above there. That's who he's making the heart sign to. It's not to all those people that abused him. But obviously his relationship with the fans is much better now. And that's amazing to see. So then it was 3-1 and you're thinking, okay, back in control, back in the driving seat. And then we can see the second and a really silly second as well. Leicester came down the right-hand side. Kelechi Iheanacho, who I thought made a real difference for Leicester when he came on. I know that they want to play with one up front. And I know that Jamie Vardy's a really difficult player to leave out, right? So I totally get that. But Kelechi Iheanacho, whenever I see him play for Leicester City, always seems like their biggest threat. So I was surprised that he didn't come on earlier. But when he did come on, he did make a difference, I thought. He got the ball on the right-hand side. He's obviously a left-footed player. Decided to step in field, drove into that half space and played a beautiful reverse pass for Maddison, who had got on his bike and made that overlapping run. And when Maddison receives the ball, I'm thinking to myself, okay, no need to panic from this angle. You shouldn't score. A lot of people have been critical of Gabriel's part in this, that maybe he didn't get out there and confront Maddison quickly enough. Maybe you could say that, but I still think that ultimately the blame here, if you want to put the blame anywhere, has to be with Aaron Ramsdale. I don't think from that angle you can be conceding goals like that. I don't think you can, as a goalkeeper from that angle, let the ball squirm underneath your legs. I think you've got to stop that. I think it should be a routine save. And unfortunately, it wasn't. And it brought Leicester back into the game at 3-2. Don't want to dwell on it for too long. I know a lot of people have been, from people I've spoken to, friends and family and sort of colleagues, some people have been a little bit concerned by Ramsdale's start to the season. He had a couple of moments. I think we're back. Apologies. I don't know what's going on with my internet today. I don't know what is going on. We're back. A lot of people have been a little bit concerned, a little bit worried, and a little bit frustrated by what they've seen from Aaron Ramsdale in the first couple of games. He had a couple of moments, against Crystal Palace where he probably could have done better, put us into some difficult situations. And then, of course, to concede the goal the way he did was a little bit frustrating yesterday. But, I mean, thankfully, we've got enough firepower at the moment to get through. And thankfully, we've got enough firepower at the moment to make that a non-issue. And, of course, we went down the other end and scored an absolute peach of a goal through Gabriel Martinelli to make it 4-2 and really put the game beyond doubt. When you watch that goal back as well, Martinelli dropped back to the halfway line to pick up the ball in the first place. He picked up a loose ball, gave it on, and then continued his run, got it on the edge of the penalty area, shifted it out onto his left foot and just swung a left boot at it across the goal, across Ward. Brilliant strike, in off the post. Beautiful finish. And great to see Martinelli increasing his outputs as well. And that was it. The game was done. 4-2. Couple of substitutions. Good to see Kieran Tierney get on and get a few more minutes under his belt. Good to see Tomiyasu get on. Not really sure why Ben White came off. I wondered if there was a problem there. Hopefully there isn't. Hopefully it was just a precaution. But good to see Tomiyasu get some minutes as well. And Nketiah got in on the action too and thought he might have had an opportunity to score, but he was just slightly offside from a header that was saved by Ward. Chris says, Harry, are we not talking about the Zinchenko masterclass? We will be. We're going to come on to the individuals in just a moment. Just an apology again for my internet connection. I don't know what's going on today. I don't use Wi-Fi. It's a hardwired connection, which is why I can't understand why it's dropping off, which means it must be an issue at source, I guess. But bear with me. Apologies. I hope it doesn't happen again. But if it does, just bear with me. I will be back. Okay, let's go through then the individual performances. Let's start with Aaron Ramsdale. We just touched on Ramsdale a little bit. Is concentration a bit of a worry? Crypto FPL asks in the chat. Maybe. Maybe that's what it is. Is there a little bit of complacency creeping in? Maybe. I think with Ramsdale, he's one of those people that's got that's got to have that confidence in order to play the way that we're asking him to play. Like, it's a part of his game to take those risks. It's part of what keeps him sharp, even when Arsenal have a lot of the ball. I totally get all of that. But maybe just needs to be reined in a little bit. I said that after the Crystal Palace game, that perhaps he just needs grounding a little bit. And you know, hopefully the staff have picked up. I'm sure they've picked up on that. And I'm sure they'll be doing what they can to try and get that message across to Aaron Ramsdale, because we need him to be at his best. You know, we all know that Bern Leno wanted to move on. We all knew that Bern Leno really had to move on. But now, with Matt Turner behind him, you don't really think, oh yeah, we've got an equally good goalkeeper who can come in and do the job. Let me rephrase that, because that might be a little bit unfair. We might have an equally good shot stopper in Matt Turner, but we don't have a goalkeeper who is as comfortable in his distribution and who brings us the all-round package that Aaron Ramsdale does. So the drop-off is a bit bigger now, I think. And so it's really important that Aaron Ramsdale keeps his concentration and maintains the level that we saw for the most part of last season. Moving to right back, I thought Ben White had a really good game again, looked really comfortable again defensively, but also stepped into that midfield very, very frequently alongside Thomas Partey, as did Zinchenko on the other side. And that would free up Granit Xhaka to go further forward, free up Martin Odegaard on the right to go further forward. And that meant that we could have a five-man attack at points. And when you're attacking a back five, you need that. You need to occupy every single player to create spaces and the room for others to thrive. And so that's a big, big part of our game nowadays. And that is facilitated by White and Zinchenko stepping further forward and becoming a midfield three with Thomas Partey when we've got the ball, and then leaving Saliba and Gabriel just behind the sweepers and as the last line of defence. So I thought Ben White had a good game again. As I say, the only slight concern was that he went off in the second half. Don't know if there was a problem there. We haven't had any information on that, but as soon as we do, we'll let you know. But yeah, I thought he had a good game. At centre-back, Saliba, strong contender for man of the match for me, despite scoring an own goal. And that tells you everything you need to know about his level of performance. Again, super calm, super composed in most situations, barring that one moment. Very comfortable on the ball. His distribution was good. Physically looks up to it, very quick across the ground. And I'm so, so excited about William Saliba. And Brendan Rodgers actually moved in his press conference to highlight William Saliba and talked about the fact that he thinks he's going to do really, really well. Gabriel had a good game as well for me, for the most part. Again, maybe you could be critical of his role in Leicester City's first goal. I beg your pardon, second goal. Did he get out quick enough to James Maddison? Maybe not. Did he get drawn infield? Maybe a little bit too easily. Maybe. But again, overall, I thought he had a pretty decent game. Zinchenko was outstanding on the left-hand side. Similarly to Ben White, stepped into that midfield, showed a real technical security that we really, really needed, because that was probably Leicester's strong side with Timothy Castagne coming down there, James Maddison often drifting out there as well. So he gave us that defensive solidarity, but also I thought technically contributed so much, helped the game move, helped the game flow. And when he steps in field, he looks as comfortable as a centre midfielder, because he is a centre midfielder. So, yeah, superb performance from Zinchenko again. Moving into midfield, Thomas Partey. Oh, he started this season so excellently, hasn't he? Gets the ball, he turns, he spins. He's always looking to receive it on the half turn, always looking up early, always looking to pick someone out early, always looking to play a forward pass where possible. And he's a real kind of general in that midfield for us. Defensively strong, solid, powerful, but technically so very good as well. And you know, he's such an important player to this team. And the big fear is this season, you know, what happens in the event that Thomas Partey picks up an injury or is unavailable? And that is a valid concern to have, and we've talked about it before, the drop off between Thomas Partey and everything else that we have available at our disposal is so big. And that's why people are concerned. That's why people are worried. That's why people are saying we need to get another midfield player in. But Thomas Partey's don't grow on trees. You know, it's not easy to identify midfielders of that quality. And it's not easy to get those deals done more often than not. I don't think you're going to find someone as complete as Thomas Partey, who you could sign today We've tried to go down the route of potential in maybe Lokonga. Is he at Partey's level now, though? No, nowhere near it. Will he get there? Maybe someday, but he's not there today. And so there is a worry that, you know, if he's unavailable, we drop off. I've said to you guys before, I think Mikel Arteta will feel now with Elneny, with Lokonga, with Xhaka, with Zinchenko in the picture as well, that he can maybe cope with a Partey absence better than he could previously, but it's still not ideal. And the more I watch him and the more he performs, the more I sit there and think, my God, what are we going to do without him? So, yeah, another top performance for him. Granit Xhaka was probably the man of the match for me. I know Gabriel Jesus scored a couple of goals. I know Martinelli was very, very good as well. But Granit Xhaka, I thought, barring that one giveaway of possession in the first half, I thought was flawless. I thought he got forward to great effect. I thought he got back to great effect. I thought he was brave in his positioning, as he's been instructed to do, and obviously contributed a goal as well. He's a real leader in this team. And whether people want to admit it or not, whether people want to give him the praise he deserves or not is another matter. But to be honest with you, he's been proving people wrong now for the past 12, 18 months. And those who can't see his importance and value to this side are just biased. Like, there's no other way to say it, right? There's no way of dressing this up. This is a player who played very, very well yesterday and has played very, very well for a very, very long time now. Have there been a couple of subpar performances in and amongst that? Of course there have, but who hasn't underperformed at times? It's the nature of the game. It's the nature of the beast. But I think he's done really, really well. And for me, he was the man of the match. Moving on to Martin Odegaard, a little bit quiet. I have to say, I wanted a bit more from Martin Odegaard in terms of his influence on the ball. What I thought was really interesting in the first half yesterday was that Martin Odegaard, more often than he normally does, decided to kind of pick himself up and move over to the left-hand side rather than the right. And that just gave us a little bit more variety, a little bit more of the ability to overload on that left-hand side. And I think we really benefited from that, which suggests to me the fact that he did pick himself up and go over to the other side, which he normally doesn't really do. That suggested to me that Leicester City had done some sort of job on him. And he felt that he was struggling to get in the game because you know, he weren't getting the ball. He wasn't able to pick it up in the positions he wanted. He did get on the ball a fair amount, but, you know, it just, I don't know, there was something just not quite right. And the fact that he then decided to get up and go over to the other side, which he never does, suggested to me that he felt that too. I kind of wanted more from him in that I think he normally performs better at home. But the good thing is now that we're not solely reliant on Odegaard for creativity. And when you're not solely reliant on one player, you know, you can get away with them having off days. You can get away with them not being at their brilliant best, and you can get away with funneling the majority of your play via another route. And I think that that's what we did yesterday. And yeah, but he did, as Crypto says in the chat, give us balance. He did help the ball move along, a couple of nice, tidy touches in the middle of moves, just kind of keeping the flow going, which is obviously very, very important as well. So yeah, look, superb. From the team overall, Martin Odegaard a little bit below par, but again, two games into the season, I'm not pressing the panic button yet. I know a lot of people are. I don't really understand it though, to be honest. Just before I forget, big shout out to Elgon M. It was just great to meet you yesterday, Harry at Media. Thank you so much, mate, for all your help as well. Really good to meet you too, man. And all the best. Hopefully see you very, very soon. Right. Let's go to the wings. Bukayo Saka, a little bit underwhelming as well. I thought this at Crystal Palace, but obviously he contributed late on at Palace when he put that cross in that led to the own goal. And I think that kind of masked over the fact that Saka wasn't quite at his best. There's almost a hesitance in Saka at times to take people on. There's a hesitance to make that half a yard of space and have a shot back across the goal like he did so frequently last season. I don't know if I don't know if it's that Saka isn't playing as well or if it's that we're not as reliant on him, so we're not kind of overplaying his importance and significance. I'm kind of at a loss here to decide which side of that kind of fence I fall on. But again, a bit like the problem that Odegaard will have is that teams will look at Saka and go, he's a big bloody threat. We've got to do everything to shut him out of the game. And so, you know, that plays a part as well. But it's about variation. It's about varying it up. And all of them played their part. Again, I'm not saying that Saka had a bad game, but he wasn't as effective as Martinelli, for example. Gabriel Jesus plays in a different position, so it's kind of difficult to compare the two. But yeah, not Saka's most effective game, in my personal opinion. Martinelli, on the other side, however, was so effective. Scored a great goal to make it 4-2. Superb goal. Combined superbly with Gabriel Jesus, made great runs throughout. There was one moment in the first half where Gabriel Jesus had the ball in a central position and the Leicester City defence just opened up like the Red Sea. And Martinelli made this lung-busting run from the left inside, got into a central position, and all Jesus had to do was slip him through, and he didn't. He hesitated, he delayed, and the move broke down in the end. But you know, just the combination between those two is a lot more encouraging, generally speaking, than the combination play between Saka and Jesus. I feel like they're not quite on the same level at times. But Martinelli, superb, you know, so, so good, so energetic. Really kind of put the cat amongst the pigeons early doors as well, when he sort of really gave Wesley Fofana a physical challenge and a physical battle. That, for me, is what Martinelli has that maybe Saka doesn't. Saka's great at holding up the ball. And for a little guy, which he is, he's got a real sort of low center of gravity and the ability to hold people off. And he's definitely improved in that department, I think, over the last 12 months. But Martinelli just has that explosiveness that maybe at times Saka doesn't show. I don't know if it's down to fatigue. He played a lot of football last season. Martinelli just has that explosiveness that sometimes gives him the advantages and really does unsettle defenders. And when you're a centre-back playing on the right side of a back three like Wesley Fofana was yesterday, you don't want to come up against a Gabby Martinelli who's going to take you running inside, who's going to take you running on the outside, who's at times going to peel as wide as the touchline itself, who's going to smash into you at every opportunity, who's going to go into every challenge. Look, I don't want to generalize because I think that's unfair, but I've always kind of said this sort of privately among friends and colleagues. There's something about South American footballers. Perhaps it's the way they were brought up. Perhaps it's the struggles and the hardship that a lot of them have had to go through to get to where they are today. Perhaps it's the nature of the game when they were growing up, playing in the streets, playing, you know, playing at local playgrounds, on local pitches. There's just a tenacity that they seem to have that not everybody else has. I don't know where that comes from. As I say, I think it's probably from the way you're brought up. I think it's probably from the fact that you had to probably earn the right to play from a physical standpoint before you could do all the Samba skills and all of that stuff. But we used to see it in Sanchez. Luis Suarez is a good example of a player that has that in it, or had that in an abundance. And Martinelli has that similar thing. And I really, really like it. Really, really like it. So I thought he was great. And then, of course, Gabriel Jesus, 2 goals. Can't really ask for more from your centre forward. I thought he was busy all the time. I thought he was physical. I thought he was really lively and really involved in the build-up. I read somewhere after the game, I can't remember exactly how many it was, but that Gabriel Jesus had had something like 50 odd touches. In comparison to Erling Haaland, who played for Manchester City yesterday. Manchester City scored 4, but I think he only had 8 or 9 touches of the ball. That's not to be critical of Erling Haaland. They got battered. Manchester City won 4-0, not to take anything away from them, but just highlighting how much of a focal point a striker can be, and that some teams will really work through Jesus like we do, and Man City didn't really work through Haaland yesterday. They used him to occupy people. They used him to occupy spaces and ultimately create room for others. But we really do use Gabriel Jesus as a focal point and someone that we can ping the ball off and get in and around. So I thought he had a great game as well. Just wanted to give a big shout out as well before we move on to the Ashburton Army in the Clocken. Now, when you sit in the press box, so I'm normally in the North Bank, so sometimes the atmosphere in the Clocken gets a little bit lost on me. It's the complete other side of the stadium. Sometimes people, I come away from the game, I go onto Twitter or whatever, and people say, oh man, the atmosphere in the Clocken today was superb. And I'm like, was it? You know, I'm at the complete other end of the ground. I know they're singing, but you don't really feel it until you're much, much closer to it. The atmosphere in the North Bank is always pretty good. But I've always felt that the Clocken, because of the fact that the family enclosure's there, because of the fact that some of it is taken up by the away fans, I always felt that maybe it wasn't as good. But I have to give credit to the Ashburton Army. And that's not to be critical, by the way, before I go into this, of the people that do sit in the Clocken. Like a seven-year-old kid is not going to generate the same type of atmosphere as a 30-year-old guy. Like, it's they could still shout, they can still cheer, but it's different. It's less hostile. It's more fanfare, if that makes sense. But the Clocken yesterday, having sat slap bang in the middle of the two, was superb. And everybody played their part. Fair play to everybody that was sitting there, that was in that area. But I have to say, a big shout out to the Ashburton Army. I've been working really hard for a while now to sort of establish themselves as a group in that area of the stadium. Some of them dressed up as ultras yesterday in their black tops, which I thought was fantastic. You know, they kept the place bouncing, and they're finally starting to get the recognition that they deserve, and they're seeing the fruits of their labor now, because people are giving them the recognition that they, you know, have been craving for a long, long time, and rightly so, because they go so far to try and improve the atmosphere. And now you've got it at both ends of the stadium. It's really great. And so fair play to them, man, because I know that when they first started, there were a few people online that were critical of them. There were people online that were like, oh, they're just a bunch of kids looking for an excuse to be rowdy and get on the booze. I say kids like 18, 19, 20 year olds. But you know what? They really have done a cracking job. And I really noticed it yesterday. I mean, yesterday I was obviously reporting on the game, and so I had a headset on with the microphone, and obviously I can hear what's going on in the stadium, but I've also got the feed of the radio station in my ear, so that when they cut to me, I know that they're going to cut to me, right? So to some degree, yes, I can hear the atmosphere, but it's a little bit warped for me. I can't hear the full effect all of the time. I do when I'm not on the, when I'm not speaking on the radio, when they're cutting to someone else or whatever, I do tend to have one headphone off so that I can still understand you know, the kind of vibe within the stadium. But even with both on yesterday, you could hear the Ashburton Army. So fair play to them. They've done a superb job, and that's the kind of thing we want to see. Okay, let's take a few of your questions for the last few minutes. While you do that, while you get them in the chat box, make sure you pop a cue at the beginning. I just want to bring you guys up to speed with the latest from Football Prizes. Now, the link is in the description for this one. Unfortunately, unfortunately, depending on how you look it out, the Gabriel Jesus signed shirt that we advertised on Friday has already gone. It's already sold out. I told you it was running till Tuesday. But if you didn't get your tickets in early doors, you could miss out. And unfortunately, those of you that haven't have missed out. But there is another prize up for grabs now, and it is a signed Martin Odegaard Arsenal shirt. There are 2 days, 7 hours and 53 minutes left on this one. 12 of the 99 tickets have been sold so far. The competition ends on Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. But again, if the tickets get bought up nice and quick, you will miss out. So if you are interested, make sure you do this. It's a cracking prize. Why not enter? Why not have an opportunity to win it for just £2.95? The way Arsenal are playing at the moment, these things are going to get snapped up. So do get involved. Visit Football Prizes. The link directly to this particular competition is in the link in the description. The link is in the description. I beg your pardon. Please do check it out. Martin Odegaard signed Arsenal shirt up for grabs. You know what? Football Prizes. I need to get involved in these. I need to start decorating the room a little bit more. Fantastic. Make sure you check it out. Look, before we dive into the questions, because there are a few coming through and I want to address a few of them as well, I just want to say, like, let's enjoy the ride that we're on at the moment. Let's enjoy the fact that Arsenal are playing well. Let's enjoy the fact that things are clicking. Let's enjoy the fact that there's a real feel-good factor. But I think our job as fans now is to make sure that we maintain that level of support, even if a difficult patch is to come. Because this is the Premier League, and the Premier League throws up all kinds of surprises. No game is a given. No game is easy. And we're not Man City. We're not going to go through the season pretty much unscathed. We've got a young, developing team with some new players, some players that are at the top of their game at the moment, but might not be in 3 months' time. Form dips, form changes. That goes for us and our opponents. There'll be challenges away from home. There'll be challenges, difficult moments at home. All I want to say is that I'm really enjoying, more so even than the football right now, the fact that everybody's behind the team and everybody's singing from the same hymn sheet. And it feels like it did in the old days. Arsenal against the world, F the rest of them. We're back to that point. We need the results on the pitch, of course, to really elevate us. But just get behind it. Get behind the team. Support the team. Enjoy it. And let's make Emirates a horrible place to come for opponents, an intimidating place like it was yesterday. Let's make it that all the time. Let's continue with the cracking away support, going to grounds up and down the country and taking over. That's what I want to see from Arsenal fans. And I think if we do our part and we play our part, the team has a much greater chance of succeeding. So, yeah, that's kind of just my little message towards the end of the podcast. But, right, let's go over to some of those questions. Alex says, could Iheanacho be a more physical backup option for a striker right winger if we got him for 20 or 30 million pounds? I like Kelechi Iheanacho. I do. I liked him when he was at Man City. And I felt he was a little bit unlucky that he was obviously behind some really top quality players. And then, of course, he moved on and he went to Leicester. And I don't really get why he's not in the team more often than he is. Do I like him enough, though, to say that he's the one that Arsenal should go out and get as a backup? Not really. It wouldn't make sense to me. I think there are better options out there. And I often think, like, we've got this thing, right, where we look in the Premier League and we go, yep, he's Premier League proven, got to get him. And to a degree, that's important. I mean, it's been important with Jesus. It's been important with Zinchenko. They've both come in. They've hit the ground running as a consequence of not having to adapt to a new style of football in terms of what they're up against. Yes, they've had to adapt in terms of Mikel Arteta's ideas in comparison to Pep Guardiola's, although there are similarities. But yeah, I just think that if your recruitment is good, you can go and you can pluck out players with maybe more potential than Iheanacho. But you just got to be a bit patient with them from the continent for much lower fees. You think about Liverpool and you think about the recruitment that they did right at the very beginning of the Jurgen Klopp era. Sadio Mane, £30 million. Virgil van Dijk, they paid a lot of money for Virgil van Dijk. And they bought a lot of Premier League proven players. And people went, oh yeah, that's the way to go. That's the way to do it. But in and among that, they've also brought a lot of players from abroad that have come in and have adapted. They've given them time and they've got to a really, really high level. I mean, Mo Salah, he wasn't Premier League proven. In fact, people were critical of him during his time at Chelsea. And then, of course, he went to Italy. Still, there were question marks about him there. And he was brought to the UK and he'd done really well. And when you think about what Liverpool paid for him at the time, it was a cracking deal given what he's given them since. You look at people like Roberto Firmino, what a bargain that's been over the years. Absolute steal. You look at people like Fabinho, who came from the French Ligue 1. You look at, you know, Robertson, who came from Hull City. You don't always need to go and buy blockbuster names. I'm not saying Iheanacho is one of them. But the point I'm trying to make is that if you have a philosophy, an idea, a plan, it then becomes much easier to identify players that fit into that plan. You're not just randomly going out and plucking out people because you think they're talented and spending big money on people solely because you think they're talented. You're doing it because you think they're talented, but because you also know, based on your assessments of that player and based on your clarity within your own mind of what it is you're demanding, that they would be a good fit. And now that we have a plan, now that we have a philosophy, now that we have a style, I expect there to be more hits than misses when it comes to our recruitment. Iheanacho, not for me. I know I've digressed a little bit away from the question. Not personally for me, but I do think he's an underrated player. I do. Moss says, Zinchenko was amazing. Is he making Xhaka step up his game? Well, I think, yeah. I mean, the better the players around you, the better you're going to perform, the more, the less responsibility you have. So, you know, if you're carrying someone, then you do have a bit more responsibility. And at times, Xhaka playing in that left-sided midfield role was carrying, for example, Tavares when his defensive sort of duties or his defensive ability was questionable. He was carrying Cedric Suarez there at times, who is in the left back. We've had a lot of instances where Granit Xhaka has had to plug holes at left back, also had to help out in midfield in the absence of Thomas Partey, where it's been someone lesser who isn't able to hold that position maybe by themselves. So yeah, putting competent players in and around Granit Xhaka has taken some of the shackles off of him, has allowed him to get further forward, has allowed him to influence the game further up the pitch. And we're seeing all of the benefits of that. Big hello to Gary Griffin, who says, Harry, are you still confident we will get more business done? If yes, which position and who? I'm not going to go as far as saying I'm confident, because you never know. But I do think that Arsenal are at least trying for one more. Edu was spotted on a flight to Valencia this morning. I don't know what that was about. I mean, someone posted it on Twitter. I don't know how true it is. It was a Ryanair flight as well, which suggests to me that this is a last minute thing for Edu to be jumping on Ryanair. He must have had no choice. But, you know, is there a deal to be done somewhere? I don't know. I do think Arsenal are working. I do think Arsenal are trying. Would I go as far as saying I'm confident though? No, I do think though a centre midfielder is the thing or the player that we've got to be looking at, or the position that we've got to be looking to strengthen in ahead of anywhere else. That's my personal opinion. But I wouldn't be surprised if Arsenal were looking for another winger as well. Wandering Minstrel says, Harry, do you think Yuri Tielemans will be more tempted to push for a move after the game, or will Arsenal wait? Going to be so, so interesting. I loved it when he was substituted yesterday. The Arsenal fans were singing, Yuri Tielemans, we'll see you next week. hinting that that deal could be done. And it was interesting as well, because when he got taken off, the Arsenal fans behind the Leicester City dugout, who were just down in front of me, kind of all got up to sort of applaud Yuri Tielemans and like say, like give him like a bit of a message, which was kind of to say like, yeah, mate, like, you know, we do appreciate you. We do respect you. And sometimes that can go a long way. I mean, if you think back to when Cristiano Ronaldo scored that cracking overhead kick, and the Juventus fan base got up, didn't they? And they applauded Cristiano Ronaldo. When he eventually joined the club, the fact that that played a part, the fact that he felt respected and loved and wanted within that ground. Maybe Arsenal fans were trying to do something similar for Yuri Tielemans. But look, at the moment, I'm sort of in the back of my mind, I'm like, come on, we can do this. We can get it done. But there's a part of me as well that just constantly reverts back to thinking, if we wanted to do this, we'd have done it by now. So what are we waiting for? I don't know, man. I don't know. But I said to you guys last week, I think, in one of the shows, I do feel it's reached the point where if Tielemans really wants this summer, he's got to start pushing. His representatives have got to start pushing. And at least publicly, we've had no indication that that's the case. Paul James says, do we now have two world-class strikers in Martinelli and Jesus? And can they have the impact of Kane and Son? They certainly have the potential to have that level of impact. And that's the key word for me, potential. Gabriel Jesus, 25, going to be 26. You know, he's proven himself in the Premier League, proven himself at a big, big club, a good team in Manchester City. The pressure is more so on him than it is on Gabriel Jesus. And so the expectation levels around Jesus, the expectation levels are going to be higher around Jesus than they are Martinelli, and rightly so. I'm okay with people putting their hopes on Gabriel Jesus. With Martinelli, though, I just advise a bit of caution. Looks like he stepped it up. I said that this was a big season for him. In my season preview, that I really thought that he'd be the one to watch. He'd be the one to take it up a level. And, you know, he scored twice in the opening two Premier League games. And so that's superb. But I am wary of putting too much expectation on a young man who is a young man. But yeah, fingers crossed he can continue to push and continue to develop. And there's no reason why they can't become our Kane and Son equivalent in the years to come. Amira says, do you think Odegaard isn't shining as much as he did last season because he finally has players around him who are on his level in terms of football intelligence? He's quietly going about his business. Well, naturally, like last season, when you looked at him and you looked at the team around him, you could see a much superior technical level from Martin Odegaard than you could from anybody else in the vicinity. Now you're seeing that across the board. You're seeing it a lot more. And so, yeah, it does detract from Martin Odegaard a little bit, but he's still so important. He leads the press. He organises. He's Mikel Arteta's voice on the pitch. He's a really important part of this team, and don't let anybody tell you otherwise. His role is key. He will continue to be key for this Arsenal side. I'm sure of it. I'm convinced of it. Unfortunately, he's a bit like Mesut Ozil in the sense of those little deft touches, those little short passes, the little flicks around the corner, the positioning, the way he keeps the ball moving. All the things that are his strengths are sometimes the things that go under the radar in football analysis. Sometimes we're too obsessed with assists, goals, and we overlook those other things. Now, obviously, you want goals and you want assists and you want those things too. They're a great barometer as well of how much of an influence a player is having on a football pitch, but they shouldn't detract away from all the other good stuff. And I feel like people are missing some of what Martin Odegaard brings to the table. Going to pick out just a couple more questions before I leave. Mike Carpenter says, here we go. Oh, I'm so sorry, guys. I don't know why this keeps happening today. I'm told that there's a problem with the internet provider in my area. Somebody sent me a message to say that they've got the same problem as well. A very good friend of mine. So, yeah, is what it is. Let me go back to that question from Mike Carpenter. Apologies again. I haven't got a TalkTalk router, I can tell you that. I've got Virgin Media, which is supposed to be the bloody fastest internet in the country. Got the top speed, and they're still giving me shit. Must be a problem in the service. Back to Mike's question before I was rudely interrupted. Do you think the club are hesitant on Tielemans because he lacks presence when defending set pieces? Xhaka is top at heading the ball away under pressure. I don't think that that would be a deciding factor in looking at Tielemans. I don't know that for sure, and I don't know that for a fact. You know, I'm not Mikel Arteta, but I would, if I were looking at a midfielder, I don't think that would be something that puts me off. I think if your positioning is right, you should still be in a good position to deal with set pieces. And I think we do have a lot more confidence in our positioning around set pieces, both offensively and defensively. I don't think that would be the deciding factor, but I do think you're right in saying that Granit Xhaka gives us something there. I talk quite a lot about Granit Xhaka's presence in midfield, the fact that he's a big guy, tall guy, powerful guy, and I think that obviously helps us in set pieces, and that would be one of the reasons perhaps why Mikel Arteta is reluctant to just move him on and move him out of the team, and why he does play such a huge part. But it's an interesting point, because I certainly agree with you that Tielemans wouldn't give us as much of that. But I'd argue that Tielemans might give us a bit more output in the final third. Like, if you think about the positions that Granit's been getting into recently, those half spaces in the final third of the pitch, I think Yuri Tielemans would probably score more goals from that area. I think Yuri Tielemans would probably get more assists from those areas. So it's kind of a bit of a trade-off, isn't it? But yeah, it's a valid point, and I totally get what you're saying. Lots of you destroying my internet provider in the chat, as you should be. I'm so upset. I'm so pissed off about it. And it's annoying as well, because now when I put out the audio podcast, I have to go and cut bits so that those guys don't have periods of silence. You guys are live. You can see what's going on. But yeah, not great. Paul James says, Houssem Aouar moving to Nottingham Forest, reported on Sky. View Harry. Nottingham Forest are going big in the window. Fair play to them. Greek owner Evangelos Marinakis, who is the owner of Olympiakos as well. I've wondered how big he would go. He looks as though he's going to go as big as he possibly can. The problem is that he's the type of guy that would leave Forest as a sinking ship if they were to go down again. But then they know all about bad owners. They've been in this boat before. I think in the short term, at least, you've got to look at it and give him praise and say at least they're being ambitious. Houssem Aouar, if he ends up at Nottingham Forest, what does that tell you? You know, it tells you that all of those Arsenal fans that were going apeshit when we didn't sign him, that were losing their minds when Arsenal wouldn't go that extra mile to bring him in. You know, probably weren't justified in doing so if he ends up at a club like Nottingham Forest. It's not like he's going to Real Madrid. It's not like he's going to Barcelona or Paris Saint-Germain or someone capable of competing at the very top level. If Houssem Aouar pops up at Nottingham Forest, then I think that will be vindication for the fact that we were probably right to stay away. But hey, we'll see. We shall see. Right, guys, I'm going to love you and leave you before my internet cuts off again in the middle of a live stream. Thank you all so, so much for your support. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you so, so much as well for bearing with me on the couple of occasions where the internet just dipped for a few seconds. Really, really, really do appreciate you bearing with me and appreciate the support. On the audio, you're probably going to hear me moaning about the internet, but I'll try and cut those patches out, and you'll probably be thinking, what the hell is he moaning about the internet for again? But it has been a real ball ache during this live stream. Thank you all so, so much once again. You know what? I haven't even prompted you today to hit the likes. Please do check out Football Prizes. The Martin Odegaard shirt is up for grabs. The link is in the description below. Make sure you check it out. But in terms of likes today, where are we? There is loads of you watching, but there's only 168 likes on the board. Come on, get me up to 250 before the outro plays. I'd really, really appreciate it. I'll be back very, very soon with more. On our next episode, we'll be reviewing the All or Nothing episodes 4 to 6. I was going to do it today, but I thought I'd give you guys the weekend as well to just watch it if you haven't, because I know a lot of people haven't seen it. I don't want to put it out and spoil it for people that haven't seen it, but I've got a real in-depth review of those episodes coming your way. I sat and watched it again for a second time and made notes. So I'm looking forward to dissecting that with you guys as well. But until next time, take care of yourselves and enjoy your sunny Sunday. Goodbye.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.